Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine, episode 96. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Welcome home.
Thanks, Jason. I feel good to be back.
Whew. Yeah, it's good to have you back.
The chief is rested.
You went to Canada. You fled the country in order to get away from the press tour. I admire this.
I did flee the country, and I love Canada. I actually kind of want to move there now. I've had that feeling for a long time, but this recent stay in Vancouver with my teenagers, Dose Teenage Fan Club, as I'm now calling them, much to their hatred. Like, it doesn't even make sense in Spanish. I'm like, I know, right? Isn't that what's cool about it? We just loved it.
I'll tell you, the Pacific Northwest in general is great if you go in like July and August.
Right? Yeah, apparently we actually arrived in Vancouver on the hottest day of the year, and it was only like 85, and they were like dying. And, but the humidity was kind of high, but they're the nicest people. It's kind of crazy. It doesn't make any sense how nice they are.
Yeah, I know. It's true. Knowing some Canadians, they're very nice.
Love Canada.
So we haven't done a regular episode in a while because you were at press tour. I talked to the switchboard at the hotel a little, and we had some bad internet problems. It's miraculous we got two episodes out, quite frankly.
It was really, you know what that was? That was like an Olympic moment. I'm going to tie back into the now concluded Olympics. Mm-hmm. That was like an Olympic moment where we were the 800 meters champs, and we were every week, we were going, and we were hitting on all cylinders, and right there in the tail end, we pulled a hammy. We shredded the hammy off the bone those last two episodes.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We needed a week to recover, in fact, to get it back together. That's like being a hurdler and getting to the last hurdle and just hitting right into it and going face down onto the track.
Oh, yeah. Technologically, we face planted.
Although I heard from some people who appreciated the fact that we basically the conversation stops, and then you hear me dialing the hotel. that they liked the transition at least, and we soldiered on. You know, we didn't have an internet connection, and we made it work on the phone because we care.
That's right. We tried. We finished. It was the Olympic spirit and the podcasting spirit.
And I was happy to hear in the second one we did, because the connection was so bad. We managed to get it to all work, and the final episode sounds fine. But I believe if you listen back to it, you can tell that I think neither of us could really understand what the other one was saying because the connection was so terrible. But in the end, it sounds like a perfectly reasonable podcast. So.
Well, that's you worked your magic. That's why.
That was pretty wild stuff.
A technical marvel.
So we got lots of letters that have queued up over time that I know we should get to, but there's also some news and some reviews that we should probably talk about. You dropped your review recently of Atlanta on FX, and that seems like a pretty positive review of Donald Glover's new show.
Yeah, it really is. That was a series that totally resonated with me, and it's one of those few. I think it's one of those few times when you're a critic, even in this like platinum age of television, where you watch one and you're like, "Oh, there's something going on here." And I watched the next one, and I loved it, and I started thinking, "Okay, this is like why you get excited to do stuff." I knew there was something going on here that was different. That he was trying to make a show that really defied description in a lot of ways. I ended up watching the first four, which is what they gave us. But I also got to talk to him at the Fox and FX party when I was at TCA. And I normally don't talk to stars at all. You know, I just drink in a corner or with my fellow critics. I talk to executives, but I really don't talk to stars. But I actually talked to Donald Glover for a long time, which I'm told from the FX people that was a feat in unto itself, because he tends to not talk for very long for people. So we had a really great talk, and I found out more about his show and motivations. I actually offered him up some early thoughts on it that I loved, and I think that one of the things that he, and maybe that's why we talked so long, one of the things that he really liked was, you know, I just said, listen, I love it. I'll tell you all the reasons I love it. And I don't know what it is. And I said, I can't describe it very well, but I get this total vibe from it. And he loved it. And he was like, that's what it is. That's the whole thing. It's just, you get a feeling from the show. There's a vibe from it. And then you get into the working of the series, and it's just a show about everyday people. I called it an existential comedy. It's just people trying to survive and get through the day, and their stories are really interesting, and it's shot really interesting, and the actors are amazing in really surprising ways. So yeah, definitely put that one on your radar. You want to watch that.
All right. And it's his show too. I mean, that's the thing, is you're not just talking to him as an actor, you're talking to him as the creator of the show. So,
yeah.
You know, this is the thing that he wanted to make. And I see that you liken it to something like Master of None, where this is or Louis, where you've got this, it's a direct take from somebody who's creating something that is what they want to make, and it doesn't really fit into a form, and you can tell that it's a really personal kind of voice that's happening. And you said it's kind of undefinable, so it's funny, but is it also not also serious and also musical? I mean, it sounds like it's a lot of things all kind of put together.
Yeah, it's there's you know, it's definitely about the rap music business and getting into it, but not in any way like roadies or vinyl. It's much, much more like sort of right at the bottom, the DIY. So, you know, there's not any musical moments or anything, but there's music in it. It's really good. There's drama, but there's not really stakes except for people just trying to get through the day. You know, Donald Glover's characters, just they're in Atlanta and they're not making very much money, and he's kind of living day to day. There's just a realness to it. You feel like you're watching like a real, like you followed somebody down, like, you know, cinema verite. You're just following somebody around. But it's very funny. There's some really funny moments. There's some really surprising characters. It's not like broadly funny, or I mean, there are a couple really laugh out loud moments, but it's just supposed to be fun and funny. It's not supposed to be a comedy. It's kind of, that's why I very much like Louis and Masters of None, why I put that on there, but also because it's, you know, those were the breakout moments for those guys. I mean, Louis C.K. really set the template for, I'm going to do this all by myself. It's my singular vision. And luckily I'm at an outlet, FX, that's going to let me do it. And it's very similar to what's going on now with Donald Glover. So that's nice to see.
So Atlanta is September 6th. So a week and a half away.
Yes, we can halfway.
All right. What about Gomorrah? That's another show that you reviewed. That's the Italian version of The Wire, basically.
It's already, and I really liked it. You got to get through the subtitles. So if you're used to going through subtitles, that's probably a thing. If not, maybe you might struggle some more. I just like the fact that it's a different world on something that we're familiar with. I mean, I don't think that there's very few shows. Unless they are of their, you know, it's like, for example, I don't see anything on American television so much that looks like Happy Valley. But Gomorrah, I know that there's, you know, there's tons of mob stories, and there's The Wire and Breaking Bad and all that stuff. But and we've seen it. It's not unfamiliar to us, and it's gangster stuff, and it's all the nuts and bolts of it are familiar. But I just like the fact that it's set in Italy, and not just set in Italy to be set there. It's these people live there. This is kind of the lifestyle, based on a book and then a movie, but it's totally different from the movie. I like it. I mean, it's not, I'm not going to like race out and do cartwheels about it, but I thought it was really good. So
all right.
That was fun.
So that's on Sundance, and it just premiered a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm. You can catch up easy.
All right. You wrote a piece that I just wanted to touch on since we're wrapping up the press tour, putting a bow on it, putting it in the garbage can. And speaking of which, the dumpster fires of the TCA summer press tour, that piece that you and Dan Feinberg did together, one of your conversation pieces. I don't know if there's anything that you want to call out here. The one that struck me was your concern about the fact that Amazon's Man in the High Castle no longer has a showrunner, and they seem to be just kind of okay with letting it go without one, which is weird and makes, I think, you concerned, and me too, about the second season of that show.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I when I was in that session, I kept thinking, oh, no. But on the other hand, you know, it's, There's been successful shows that have turned it over, and many times the different showrunners, Walking Dead among them.
Sure.
And it'll be fine. I just think that that is such a delicate show, because now they're going into an area where their book doesn't exist, right?
Right.
So they've done it all.
It seems like Spotnitz, too. Frank Spotnitz was really like the driving factor of that, that it was his vision. And it's weird because it sounds almost like in the second season, they're like, look, we need you to be more present. And he's like in Europe or somewhere. And he's like, no, I'm not going to come back to the States to work on this, or to Canada, or wherever they're making it. And it's just what a strange situation. So he's like, he wrote a lot of episodes in season two, but he got sort of relieved as showrunner, and they're allowing it to run with the existing producers. And it's just it just sounds weirdly dysfunctional. It's not that it couldn't work. It's just sort of like, what's going on there that would lead them to have this kind of machine that's running without a single operator at the top.
Yeah. It's slightly worrisome, but on the other hand, it's Amazon, and if we learned anything from the last two TCA appearances from Amazon, they do things completely different. Yeah. And I just, you know, I did a whole, as you and I talked about, I did a whole story about Amazon and their branding and, their intent. And it's almost like we made the show. It's done. It's out there. Go find it. And then they're on to something else. So I'm not so sure they're super involved with like whether a showrunner is necessary. Maybe they're right, or it could be to their detriment, but they didn't seem to be too worried about it. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. And I know you didn't review the Amazon comedy pilots. I think Dan got that, that job. I watched one of them. I watched The Tick because I loved the original.
What did you think?
I liked it more than Dan did. I thought it was fine. I think it has some weird pacing issues. The thing that I noticed about it that I feel like we've talked about on this show before too is I'm not sure that when you make a pilot episode that you should make the how they met episode, that you should make like a representative episode of like, this is what the show is going to be like. And right. You know, The Tick, it's a How They Met episode, and so we spend the bulk of the runtime getting to know Arthur the accountant, who is going to be the Tick's sidekick. And I'm not sure that was the best choice, but I thought it was funny, and I thought it was stylish and interesting, and I would love to see it be a series, because I think it's a great idea. I thought the cartoon series was great. I thought the original live action series was great, and so another take on it from Ben Edlund, who's a very funny writer, and you know, he created the comic book, and then he worked on his animated show. He keeps on coming back to The Tick, so I'm excited about it, but it is weird. The Amazon pilot thing is weird, where they just sort of, it's like the Hunger Games for TV shows. It's very strange that they do this.
Yeah, and it's for me the weird part. I mean, usually I'm around, and we've been spotty over like. I've done them all myself before Dan got there. I think we did want some together or divided. Maybe we divided Vice's ones together. I just find the process really weird in that you review a pilot that doesn't actually have, you don't know if it's going to get picked up or if there's going to be a premiere date, or how many more episodes. It's just like, just watch it now and then it'll come back sometime in the future. I find that in this days of confusion, ball of confusion situation we're in, a lot to ask.
Yeah. No, I agree that the Amazon's having everybody watch its pilots for it instead of just sort of like, just pick already. But yeah. Sometimes I think that we would all be better off if when they set their schedules in the spring, if the networks just put the pilots for their fall shows online then, because what's the harm? If you can build some buzz, great. And if nobody watches, it doesn't matter. You're going to show the pilot in the fall. I wonder if somebody will do that at some point. Just why not? Might be an interesting experiment.
I don't know. I think that's probably going to happen. I mean, surprised that it hasn't already.
Right? That like, yeah. ABC was like, we're putting all our comedy pilots on. You can watch the first episode now, and it's coming this fall. I was like, well, that's interesting. You can build some buzz, maybe build some fandom, maybe. I don't know. Everybody's trying everything on the internet right now, so why not put all your pilots online?
Well, just quickly, the thing that drives me crazy about that is that even before we had this explosion of peak TV and too much TV, they were always doing the same thing every year, and I would just facepalm. I was like, okay, so we have 40, back in the day, it was like, oh, so we have 44 new shows. And here's a whole 30 of five of them are going to debut in a week, 1 week or a week and a half period. Now that to me is insane because no one can sample them all. And, you know, you had a 1 week to a 2 week period and people didn't even want to go in the second week because, oh, if we don't go in the first week, then everybody who finds the first five shows that they watch in the first week, they'll never get to us in the second week. It's such a dumb strategy. And it had a built-in kill switch where it's like, okay, there's no logic to this, so we're going to throw it all out there, and you guys just kill yourself doing it, rather than thinking broadly or saying like, hey, before everybody else does ours, let's just put them all online. And then if you like it, you can watch it at your leisure, and then you might get loyalty. It's I don't know. It's amazing that in 2016, so much has not changed.
Yeah. So before we move on to letters, we've got a couple more news items that we should probably talk about. There's an anniversary. This is your moment to drink some of that Ken Burns water that you've been saving. Talk about how quotidian things are and give a shout out to the national parks.
Yes, the National Park Service turned 100 yesterday, actually, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I follow a lot of the national parks on Instagram. It's such a great thing to do if you're an Instagram person. Beautiful pictures every day. It takes you away. It's like, ah, yes, I should be going there. Or, you know, many times when I was at TCA, I was like, oh, yes, I would love to go to any one of these parks, Glacier National Park, wherever you want to go. So it was very nice that also they were coming up on 100. And one of his documentaries that I love so much, and you can still watch bits of it on PBS Online. I don't know, actually, I should probably know this, but I don't know if PBS showed it leading up to the 100th anniversary. They certainly should have. But you can find it somewhere, and it's totally worth it. It's The National Parks, America's Best Idea, a film by Ken Burns. And I have to tell you, you obviously know I'm a huge Ken Burns fan, but that is must-see television for people who don't know how it started or just need to have their sensory, you know, experience enlightened and enhanced. If you're ground down about life, or you're doing the same thing every day, watch this film and you're like, okay, I need to get outdoors more often. And it really is America's best idea. And it's amazing the backstory that it actually happened. And if you look at it now through the prism of 2016 politics, it's amazing that anything like this got passed and done. But yeah, we set aside some pretty amazing spots in the country, and now we can go to them and enjoy them. So yeah. Check that film out.
I was just in Yosemite earlier this year. Beautiful.
There you go.
Beautiful mm-hmm. stuff. Okay, new premieres. We've got two things coming in the next week that we should alert people to.
Yes.
So we've got The Strain on Sunday. Vampires, spooky. Ooh.
I like The Strain. The Strain is a season 3 starts Sunday. Yeah, 10. And they were here. They were at, I say here. I feel like I'm still in TCA. They were at TCA. And you know what? They continue to be interesting people. It's a fun series. I would say this about The Strain. While it didn't become their version of The Walking Dead, I think The Strain is so much more fun than something like Fear the Walking Dead, you know, which is a series I wish was better and I could get into, and now I don't really care at all. So it's just like a second tier thing. It's got its own mythology. It's fun. It's weird. I like it. So if you're in, you're in. You can always catch up online, but that starts on Sunday.
That's Carlton Cuse, right? He's the...
Yep, he's there.
Showrunner of that one, along mm-hmm. with he does Bates Motel too. Busy guy. And this is one of my favorites. I know it's one of your favorites too. You're the Worst is coming back this week.
Yes, season 3 starts on Wednesday, and it's just such a fun series. You know, great change of pace on season 2 and some of the stuff that they tapped into, depression being the main one. Mm. And yeah, it's a really funny series. It was funny because back at TCA, a lot of the critics were laughing that some of them had flown out and they were trying to catch up before they got here. And so they put the they had their laptops and they put the first episode in, and it is very much a not safe for work first episode, not to be watched on a plane. And a lot of people found that out the hard way. Wow. But yeah, love that show.
Yeah, great show. So that's on FXX.
FXX,
on
yes.
August 31st. Extra X. Check for the extra X means you can't watch it on a plane.
Maybe that's what that stands for, yeah.
Okay, I've got some letters. So many letters.
But
before we do that, I need to tell everybody out there, Tim, about our sponsor.
Woohoo!
We do have a sponsor. Our sponsor, again, and there are certain listeners out there who aren't going to want to hear this, but underpants, people. Underpants.
Yes!
I need to talk to you about underpants.
You just refuse to say underwear, don't you?
In the copy it says underwear. And of course, in the UK, you would just call them pants. But
oh, you would?
Yes. Oh, they have pants. Pants, British. When British people say, I'm just standing here in my pants, they mean your underpants. Your underwear.
Really? Okay, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
I knew all things.
Yeah, it's also an insult. That's completely pants, but that's not what I'm talking about. It's like, she had nothing on but her pants means underpants.
Oh, okay, I got it now. All right, I'm gonna go underwear, but I do laugh every time you say underpants.
You can do underwear if you like. Anyway, we're talking about Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is a company that makes and sells to you on the internet underwear, yes, socks, yes, shirts, undershirts to go little friends for your underwear, hoodies, sweatpants, comfy stuff, and it is super comfortable. You will not find anything more comfortable. Smart design, premium fabrics, and the shopping experience is super easy. You go on the internet, you click around, you see these, you see some nice stripy socks, you see some nice underpants, and you click and they come to you. It's super simple, really well designed website. They've got a fancy line of silver underwear and shirts, and because they're silver, they're naturally antimicrobial, which means that they eliminate odor. And so they're going to repel any odors that are trying to cling to you, which is a beautiful thing. And one of the best things about Mack Weldon, not only is it easy to order these things, if you're afraid of getting underpants or shirts or whatever on the internet because you don't know whether you're going to like them or not, have no fear. If you don't like your first pair, you can keep it and they'll refund your money anyway. No questions asked. I don't know what you do with a pair of underpants that you didn't like, but you get to keep. Maybe give them to a friend? Wash them first. Please wash them first. I beg you. Even if they're naturally antimicrobial, you should wash them. They're great performing too. Good for working out. Good for going to work. Good for going out on dates. Just everyday life with you and comfy clothes like socks and shirts and undershirts and underwear and hoodies and sweatpants. All of that stuff. So here's what you need to do. You need to go to Mack Weldon. Let me explain how you spell that. MackWeldon. MackWeldon.com. And you'll get 20% off. So I'm serious. Load up on those stripy socks. That's 20% good. Off your order when you use the promo code TV Talk. So thank you, Mack Weldon. And once again, I say to you, underpants.
Thanks, Mack Weldon. I like stripy socks, by the way.
They're so good. All my socks were like white socks before, and I bought like 8 pair of stripy socks from Mack Weldon, and they're great.
See? That's how you do it.
And nobody sees my socks. Honestly, nobody sees my socks, but I know that I have yellow and blue striped socks, and it makes me happy.
I think you have to try every day. I mean, we're a couple of guys who work from home 5 days a week, but we got to try, because if you don't try, you're gonna be in sweatpants all day.
It's what John Madden always used to call give ups.
Yeah,
you don't want to just wear give ups. You gotta do something. If you're just giving up the whole time, it's not so good. Don't just put on the give ups.
No, I've got it going pretty much all the time.
I do. There are times when I'm feeling kind of low, like I come out here and I'm dressed like a slob and I'm not being productive. That's exactly what I'll do. Is I'll go, I'll jump in the shower, I'll get out, I'll put on pants, I'll put on stripy socks, I'll put on my shoes like I'm gonna go somewhere. Sometimes
like
when my wife is home, some mornings she'll be like, "Where are you going?" I'm like, "I'm not going anywhere. I need to lock in.
I'm going to dominate.
I'm going to work, and I'm going to kill
it."
That's
what you're
saying. That's right.
Kill it.
All right. Letters. So many letters. Let's start with some newsy stuff. We got a tweet from TV and Crumpets. I'm going to say in the +44, although who knows.
Right.
Saying, all your talk about the peak TV bubble bursting. What are Tim's thoughts on the death of Pivot? Is this the beginning of the end?
I would say that when Pivot was my poster channel 2 years ago for, I want to say maybe 2 years, but one season ago for, where they were having series, drama series that I thought were, in a comedy that I thought, people might want to watch these and they're actually pretty good, but what the hell is Pivot and who will ever find it? And it was just, yeah, these small channels. And I've written since then. I did a death knell story about small cable channels that I can tell you did not endear me to people who run small cable channels. That was always uncomfortable. You said we're all going to die.
Yeah.
Hi.
Don't mention it.
At the mixer. Yes. Here. Let's have a drink and talk about your column where you said we no longer are going to exist. We're dinosaurs. So, yeah, I mean, they're just a victim of there's too much out there. And it's too bad. I mean, and part of me is like, I hate to see stuff go because people are trying. They tried new things. They tried to appeal to millennials. They tried to, I don't know, a lot of creative stuff, but I don't think it really worked in the end. Obviously, it did not. And I would say that's the beginning of more to go.
Yeah. So beginning of the end, I think that's true. It won't be the last one we'll see. I was going to say this feels like a network that lived and died while we were doing this podcast. Not quite. It actually started in 2013, but,
I
think their original programming really ramped up right after we started. Cause I remember, I think that was one of the first conversations we had was what the hell is Pivot and where do I find it?
And they had bought Fortitude. Remember that
right,
show?
Right.
I was
right.
Like, you know, that's, that show was, well, look, the show was really good until it was really terrible in the last, like, two or three episodes. But I was like, well, this is a really different and pretty great drama on a show that no one's going to find. And that was what I was talking about, how I was saying it's overdone. But, yeah, it's the beginning of the end.
Yep. R.I.P. Pivot. Mm-hmm. We got our Dean of the 707 travel update. Now, obviously, he's been lots of places, but he gave us a little recap. I think when we last left him, it was Cheers in Massachusetts. He moved on to the first episode of The Path in New Hampshire, Dark nice. Shadows in Maine,
ooh.
New Heart in Vermont, and Fernwood Tonight in Ohio.
Wow. That is a stellar lineup.
And then at Niagara Falls, he sent us a picture of himself and his phone with the TV Talk Machine logo on it, paying respect to Wonderfalls.
Yes.
At Niagara Falls. And now they're headed back west. Thank you, Dean.
Yeah. And you know what? One of the great things that I did on my vacation was completely stay off Twitter. But when I got back and I had to get on, I think I got on to either send out the Atlanta piece or whatever. I saw his picture from about Wonderfalls from the Niagara, and it was made me laugh.
Yeah, that was great. That was a Brian Fuller show, Wonderfalls.
It was.
One of those. Star Trek, Wonderfalls. From Twitter, C. Dwelgen, I don't even know who this is, but so that person and Brando also tweeted about how Colbert now has a new thing that he's doing that is the Thingometer.
Oh.
Where it determines whether if something is a thing, maybe a thing, or not a thing. And they both were like, oh, TVTM. So thank you to them for that.
Should we have talked to Stephen about whether or not a thing was our thing?
I don't think it's our thing either. I think it's everybody's thing.
It probably is everybody's
thing. And I think not a thing is a thing. So good on them for making it even more of a thing than it already is.
Yeah. Nicely
they
done.
Should do that. Lots of things that people talk about are totally not things, and somebody needs to call them on that. David from the 336 wrote in to say, you guys had a discussion a few weeks back about the same day ratings for Mr. Robot season premiere and how lackluster they are. I think it's a mistake to assume the majority of the audience for that show watches linear TV, let alone day and time on linear TV. When you look at Alive Plus 7, the show tripled its demo audience and it also had 141% increase in total viewers. Wow, numbers. It makes me wonder if we do a disservice to a show to talk about same day numbers as a barometer of a show's viewership success in 2016. What do you think?
Definitely, even in 2014. But I think on that show that the numbers were so low when it came back, it still hasn't equaled season two. That's the point. I think that season one. We were actually talking about Live Plus 3 and
right, and comparing it to the same number, the Live Plus 3 number last year, which was down.
It hasn't got there. I think actually, and I think in the middle of the season, I'm actually just catching up. I will not go. I will not yell at myself for watching television on my vacation because it's just a thing that has to happen. But I'm catching up, and I know that when they hit the middle of the season or early middle of the season where they have these extended hour and a half episodes, that's where their ratings are really taking a hit. It's a lot to ask people to watch an hour and 27 minutes.
By the way, at 10 o'clock at night. Speaking as a person in their 40s, I don't mind watching shows late, although I would much rather that they be on earlier because of the timing and all that. But, you know, a 10 o'clock show that has a 2-hour premiere, who's watching that? Who's watching until midnight? Even if it's a show you like, that's come on, man.
And I still love it. I still think some of the things that they're doing on the show are pretty amazing.
I agree.
There's no getting around the fact that the actual pacing and freshness of it that was so attractive in season one was not there early in season two because it was those first 3 hours or 4 hours of what we got were really slow.
Yeah.
I liked them, but they were really slow. And if people were not hooked in by then, they were not going to watch.
Yeah. And there wasn't any exciting computer hacking or anything until like episode 4 or episode 5. So,
right. Exactly. And so
that's what you're tuning in for. Yeah.
Yeah. You won't get that until later. And then it's fun. But yeah, though, I don't think live same day ratings should even really matter. I don't think people watch like that anymore, but, I think and L3 and L7 are certainly more important, and you could actually argue for people in network and cable that there's the whole long tail philosophy of 30 days even is something that they want to start to monetize because we're just overwhelmed with choices, and we do get around to watch those shows sometimes.
Right.
You can't sell like a movie ad on that because the movie's already open, but yeah, I don't think the same day even exists in most people's heads anymore.
Yeah, I think the reality is though that if you're comparing like things and it's down, then it seems unlikely that people really used to watch it same day and now they don't. It's probably that cluster of people is down, and also the argument is most shows when you add in the time shifted ratings, they all move together. Now, Mr. Robot is probably a show that is more likely to add viewers than your average show, but generally when people say, oh, but you should look at the Live Plus 7, the Live Plus 7 scales for everybody. It's a rare show that is dramatically more at Plus 7 than it is at Plus 3. Usually they all just kind of move together. So, but I think Mr. Robot may be an exception to that.
So right.
By the way, I am doing occasional podcasts about Mr. Robot over at the TV podcast on The Incomparable, and I'll put a link in the show notes. I think we've done two so far. I'm doing sort of every 3 episodes or show, so I'm doing them. I haven't been doing them. It's too late. It's on too late for me to do it the same night. So I gather them up and talk about them every 3 episodes or so. So we're due for one. I need to schedule one for the last.
Yes.
Few.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
James in the 859 says, I've been slow binging, nice, Treme on Amazon Prime lately, and it made me wonder why the show never seemed to really get the attention and audience other HBO shows did. I guess a lot of it might have to do with being in the shadow of The Wire due to its association with David Simon and several cast members, but I also kind of feel like the show is flawed. Several plot lines feel a bit cliched. It doesn't feel like it's diving all deep into New Orleans culture, but the moments when it does work are as good as anything that's ever been on TV. So why did the show come and go with so little notice? Sort of answered his own question there, right? on one level.
A little bit. Yeah. It's, I struggle with Treme cause I really like it. The postmortem, I think from critics and fans alike were, similar in that there wasn't much dramatic stakes to it. And in some ways it goes back to saying that about like a vibe or a feel about the show. David Simon basically said about the show, he wanted to make you feel like you're soaking in, you're marinating in New Orleans and to get that flavor, which I think is great. It just doesn't necessarily, it just doesn't necessarily make it compelling. And I think that was the problem of the show.
Okay, we've got Rob from the Plus 618. This is Perth in Western Australia. One of the most remote cities in the world, Perth.
Really? Perth.
It's way out there. It's very far from other cities. But it's lovely, I hear. I would love to visit sometime. So Rob says, I just saw this news article and had to forward it. And the headline is, Australia's Drop Bears Win Quidditch World Cup. He says, now, if Drop Bears aren't real, why would we name our national Quidditch team after them, huh? Anyway, while I'm writing, I have a couple of not a things for you. One, computer monitors constantly and quickly scrolling computer code. Computers don't need to display the code that generated the ones and zeros. Programmers need to look at computer code very slowly. Also, bonus points for the TV Talk Machine's army of experts. Is this the same Java program that's always being listed in all shows everywhere? That's a good question. People should check that out. And I will add to that, that I was watching a show the other day, and it was, or maybe it was a movie, and it was a little bit older, but it's that frustration where text gets printed on a computer screen and you hear there's like a noise. And if anybody uses a computer, which is everybody, you know that when text appears on your screen, it does so silently. There's no sound as the monitor writes a letter on your screen. But yet in movies, it's like as the text comes out. It's not a thing, people. Not a thing. Rob's number two is maybe because I'm from a hot climate, but what is it with sex that occurs entirely beneath the sheets? And when they're finished, whoever gets out of the bed takes a sheet and about 5 minutes to carefully wrap it around themselves, presumably so the person who was just exploring their naked bodies can't catch a glimpse. Fair play, Rob. Fair point there. Anyway, keep up the good work. I look forward to the show every week. Rob in the plus 6-1.
You know, thanks, Rob. I have so many complaints about sex on television.
Oh my God.
Lots of them was like, I've done that. And I know you've got your pants on.
Yeah.
Your pants are still on. There is no way.
It's not possible.
That is not a thing. You do not have your thing out of your pants.
Hey, everybody. It's the sex edition of Not a Thing.
The sex edition, the Not a Thing section. You've got your pants on. It's not happening. It drives me crazy.
I feel like at some point what they basically have decided, some producers on some channels, is they want to have the sex scenes and they know what the rules are, which is somebody's got to be covered or somebody's got to be clothed. And so they just say, look, just wear the pants and pretend that you're having sex. And we're just going to go with it. And like everybody will have to imagine that's what we mean, but we can't show you being naked. But it's totally true. But imagine when you're a kid, when you're in your formative years, and the only experience you get to have with sex is TV and movies. You think that this is what it's like. Is it's always very carefully under a sheet and a blanket, and people usually have lots of their clothes on. The man usually has the pants on.
Men and women,
you know, they have something on their top at least a little bit, or they're totally under a sheet the whole time, up to the neck. Also, when you're done and you're just laying in bed, I have to say, men, when they're laying in bed, they're shirtless and the sheet goes to their belly button. Women, when they're laying in bed, they have the sheet up to their neck. And that seems really inconvenient if there's a man and a woman in the bed, but you got to make it work because we all have our little lines of coverage that we need.
Sheet management is what this podcast has turned into. Yeah. Sex and sheet management.
You know, Mack Weldon ought to make some sheets is what I'm saying. But
that's exactly, Mack. Get on
or
that.
We need, you know, a Casper. Mack, we need Weldon a Casper like, ad. Yeah.
Yeah. Mack Weldon is like, yeah, you should have your
underpants.
On,
wear them.
I just got a flashback to like a teen. Well, not a teen, whatever. I don't know what, but somebody who's hopefully they're not learning their sex edge from watching television, but thinking, I'm totally going to do that. I'm going to have my pants on.
I'm going to have my blue jeans on.
And the most I'm going to do is unzip my fly, and then I'm done, because I don't have to do anything else like that. It's already done.
And then you just get under the sheet. That's what happens.
Anyway, sheet management follows. The world, it's very complicated to be a young person these days.
It is.
I'm gonna throw a little into your letter reading. I'm gonna throw a little wrench in here.
Are you Columboing me?
I'm gonna Columbo you early, but I'm only doing it because I'm gonna forget if I don't. I want to tell a little quick story about TCA where Showtime was the last network of the last day. They had the last panel when it was all over. The chairs were coming down. They had a little teeny little very nice, by the way, cocktail get together. Everybody's fleeing. No one wants to go on the last day, but they had a very good turnout in a very short amount of time. You know, I have written some very not nice things about Showtime recently, and there's been letters and things. You know, we're not on the best of terms. So But I talked to their head of publicity, and you know, David Nevins, who runs the channel, eventually came over and we had a talk, even though I haven't been super nice to them and stuff. Joanna Fuentes, who I love, probably hates me, but she came over. But I had a great moment where I met someone new from Showtime, who does event planning and all the stuff that's not related to publicity. And then another woman came over who I've never met before. I've seen her many times. She's from Showtime. And she came over and you know what she said? Jason, she said, "Hi, I'm Morgan from the," I think she said it was like East Coast thing. But she gave me her zip code or her
area code.
Area code. And I was like, and she said, so Morgan Fouch. And she said that, so who's now in the 310, because I think she lives in Los Angeles. Morgan Fouch, I met her for the first time. And I love that she opened up with doing the area code and saying that she was a fan of TVTM. And of course, the first thing I said to her was, "Wow, like in the wild, I found someone in the wild."
Wow.
I loved it. It was good.
That's fantastic.
So shout out to her for, and I told her that was very nice. And she said that we were really funny. And I said, "Did you get the wrong podcast?" So she said she was jogging and she often she just like wants to run into things because it's so funny. And I was like, I, it could be the wrong podcast. Mm. I don't know. But shout out to Morgan for listening. Thank you.
That's awesome. All right. We got a few more here. Let's look at Indy Sarah.
Oh, Indy Sarah.
Mm-hmm. She says, "Even more love from the 317. She says, "Indy, please, oh please, event that Trump loses. What are the odds we get a highly reactive dystopian political drama about a society run by a frightening phony celebrity? On my own nap march with cocktails, Indy Sarah." I feel like that's going to, I mean, that this election is going to drive dystopian stories for a while now.
I think we are. Well, I mean, the Hunger Games has kind of done that. Mm. But yeah, I think we're going to get, because isn't Trump right out of the Hunger Games? That's to me. It's like he's right out of the Hunger Games. But yeah, I'm be surprised if they're not already being written right now. Or if somebody was a better planner, like what happens when like this fringe Brexit / racist / awful hatred, ignorant thing bubbles up into the political culture, takes over a whole party, and then I'm hoping they'll be annihilated on election day. But what happens, like when you feed that beast and then you lose, what happens now to those people? And that's the kind of thing that I would be looking for on a pay cable channel if somebody had some vision. And because I certainly think about, you know, I don't talk politics much at all because I hate it. But I certainly think that you have, you know, weaponized this awful part of America and the dark side of these awful people and ignorant people. And when they lose, they're going to be more pissed off than ever, which I think makes them even more dangerous than they are right now. So that's a series that if I was somebody writing something, I'd be writing that right now.
Let's there's new episodes of Black Mirror coming, so just wait
there
for
are
it.
Actually yes.
Wait for it. Wait for Dave it. In the 513 says, "On your recommendation, I slow binge." This is a thing. I think that is one of our great contributions to society, the old slow binge.
The slow binge.
"I slow binged Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. It was good. Thanks for the suggestion. I grew up in New Jersey, live in Cincinnati, or near Cincinnati now. Both places, Little League fields consist of a dirt diamond, a grass outfield, and a backstop fence. A particularly fancy field may have a small bleacher for spectators or be upwind of the sewage treatment plant. Every week, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend characters spend time at what appears to be a purpose-built concrete Little League stadium with an attached bar. I've never seen such a thing, but the characters treat it as par for the course. Is this really a thing in California, or is it just a sly dig at West Covina? The only way they can get parents to watch their kids' baseball games is to sling booze. I guess it shouldn't strike me as alien since just about every bowling alley has a bar, but home base was so unremarked that it took me several episodes to understand why there were kids walking around this bar. Keep up the good work, Dave from the 513.
Does that exist in West Covina? I don't go on set visits, so I don't know if that's
so.
Maybe it does.
Maybe it does. I mean, I think he's right. I actually think that it's one of the, there are a few slow play jokes in, mm-hmm. in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend where they just let these weird commercials and, and settings just play out. And then people refer to them later and you're like, oh yeah, that's the thing that they've been showing. And they kind of do it that way. And it's true. Like they don't even talk about the fact that there is a bar and a Little League field. They just let you watch it and kind of, I just laugh at the ridiculousness of it. I will say that in especially like suburban California, like in LA, they do have like baseball park complexes,
oh, yeah.
mm-hmm. and they do have snack shacks and things like that. It wouldn't surprise me. That's a classic Tim Goodman phrase that there's something like this, probably because they also do adult softball, someplace where adult softball leagues are a big deal. And so they do like a bowling alley. They've got the fields and then they've also got a bar and you know, you can get your food and drinks there, and it's part of like a night out, like at a bowling alley. So and then maybe they also use that for Little League. That would be my guess, is that it's something like that. But it may also just be a completely crazed addition from the mind of Rachel Bloom, and if so, then hats off to her for it, because it's wacky.
Well, I mean not to that extent of Crazy Ex, but this kind of thing definitely exists. I mean, I've unfortunately had to shuttle one of the Dose Teenage Fan Club out to many, many soccer games in areas where, oh my God, it's parental love to have to drive that far out there. That's totally not my thing. And you get out into these suburban soccer fields and complexes where, like, well, of course we have room to build it because no one lives out here but animals. And so, like, yeah, they have these gigantic complexes where, such a thing does exist. Not to that extent, obviously, where it looks like a nightclub kind of thing. But, yeah, there's definitely places you can pop in for beers. And because, like you said, the adults do play there. And it's just kind of like a meeting event in the middle of California. Yeah. So
it's weird.
Yeah.
You're not seeing things, Dave. It is weird. But I think it may actually be. Real. Let us know if you've got a softball and bar restaurant combo.
Yes. Somebody from Ripon should call in. Yeah. I've been down there before.
Somebody from Riverside or San Bernardino County.
Hey, Riverside. Woo, Rivertucky.
Call.
Yeah. Me. Born and raised, baby.
Out there where it's hot.
Uh-huh.
Bradley from the Plus 44. So lending some class from Blighty.
Yeah. You know, we love the English. We love our foreign listeners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Canadians.
Oh, before we get to Bradley's letter, I have a moment that's slightly Flight of the Conchords related, only because I want you to do your Flight of the Conchords voices. Is I was watching the Olympic stream for swimming, and all the announcers were from New Zealand. And it was great because I got to hear that New Zealand accent, which I love. And the part that floored me was when they said, she's won the gold medal. I don't know what the gold ends are, but she won the gold middle. Brit.
Present.
Brit. Okay, Bradley says, found your podcast in the last week or so and have since become somewhat hooked on listening to it, working my way backward through the episodes. He's traveling back in time.
Oh, I like that
We pay off references that he hasn't heard yet, and then we make them. Okay, that's another way of living your life, Benjamin Button style.
I like it, because you're basically already caught up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Currently, I made my way to episode 83. Thank you for stealing several hours of my time in the current environment of too much TV. I'm catching up on Unreal's second season. Side note, how did it go so wrong? And wanted to argue something is most definitely not being a thing. Uh-huh. In the seventh episode of the season, Quinn and Booth are sharing an evening together, probably under a sheet, and Quinn's phone is continually ringing. To stop it, Booth takes the phone and drops it into a jug of water. While I appreciate that this makes for entertaining television and seeing a bold move to keep the romantic atmosphere going, it never ceases to frustrate me when it happens. This is not due to the fact that one of the characters just ruined an expensive phone, although in this case, the phone somehow managed to remain completely unaffected despite being submerged for at the very least a few minutes. But the fact that they always leave the SIM card in the phone, it would be completely and irreparably damaged and the owner would need to get a new one. Perhaps it's because my phone is broken at the moment and I'm stuck using a temporary number myself, but it really bugs me, and I need to point out that this is definitely not a thing. Bradley from the Plus 44. Yeah. Why would anybody? That's like having your alarm clock going off and smashing it with a hammer into little pieces. It's like, why? No. No, yeah. That's not a thing. You don't dunk a phone in a glass of water in order to stop it from ringing.
You know what else was not a thing for Unreal?
What? Season 2?
Season 2.
Yeah.
Wow. That show won a Peabody.
Oh. That is a slam right there. That show won a Peabody.
I got to tell you, that's going to be maybe it can turn itself around in season 3, but that is going to be the poster series for going off the rails.
Wow. We got two more. Jason in the A64, our friend, said Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell is now streaming on Netflix. So check it out. So that's nice. A good little bit of knowledge from Jason. So thank you for that. I liked that a lot. That was a good show.
You were a fan of that. You were our resident reviewer of that.
Yes, because I read the book and then I thought they did a good job adapting that weird magic stuff. And finally, a letter from Michael in an unknown area code. Come on, Michael.
Oh, get it together. Michael. Jeez.
He says, longtime podcastee, first time emailer. So again, he's not up to speed on, we don't know your area code without you telling us. He says, here's a question for one of your evergreen episodes. Well, too late. We're having it now. Do you become distracted by a show because you're convinced that one actor is a dead ringer for another actor? The answer to that is yes, by the way, but yes. His examples are amazing. He says, for example, as much as I love Mr. Robot, I get annoyed because I think Grace Gummer, who is the FBI agent in season 2, looks like Homicide: Life on the Street era Melissa Leo. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Totally true. Yeah. And Rami Malek looks like Randy, the puppet from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh, wow.
Which is sort of true. Wow. I can sort of see it, although it's pushing it a little bit, Michael. But I could sort of see that. You know, the one that was really bothering me is Suicide Squad. The woman who plays Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad is a dead ringer for Jillian Jacobs from Community. And so every time I'd see the Suicide Squad ads, I'd be like, oh, look, Britta is with the Suicide Squad. And it's like, nope. Different actress, but they look exactly the same. So
you know what? And here's I can tag on to that. While in Vancouver at dinner, the waitress was coming up and I looked at her and I was like, oh my God, she's a dead ringer for an actress I know, but because we didn't have any, we didn't have a phone plan for Canada. So none of us could use, which two teenagers, you can imagine how happy they were about that. So we had to be in a Wi-Fi spot to actually, you know, send stuff and look stuff up. So this beautiful machinery, that we had from, Apple was sitting in our hands and useless. And I just kept getting mesmerized by this person. I'm like, oh my God, she's a dead ringer. And then I couldn't remember it. And then we finally broke down and told her about it. And she said, no, no one's ever said that. And then I was like, oh, I got it. Liza Lapira. And she's like, what? I'm like, yeah. I said, go back and Google it. And Liza Lapira has been in a bunch of stuff, including NCIS and tons of CBS sitcoms. And then I went back and I talked to the Teenage Fan Club and they said, what if you're wrong? And she looks it up and says, that guy's just weird. He's just an idiot. So I went back. We got back. We got the Wi-Fi loaded up. And I was like, boom, right? Like dead ringer, like identical twin sister. Nailed it.
Ah, wow.
There you go.
Good.
Liza Lapira, people.
That's a good. See, because you can go on vacation, but all that TV comes with you.
Comes
in your brain.
Right back to me, man.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, let me give everybody the numbers. This is how you can reach us: podcast@tvtalkmachine.com to send email to us. You can go on our Facebook page, facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. By the way, we're at 995 likes on Facebook. So come on. You may not like anything on Facebook, just like us, okay? Because push us over to 1,000.
Get us over the hump.
You got to do it. Or realize that you're liking us on Facebook, think that's a mistake, and unlike us on Facebook. You could do that too. Take us down below 900 if you want, but we'd like to go up to 1,000. And you can tweet at us at TVTM. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And until next week, where we'll be back here in our homes like normal with nobody going to a hotel.
In our underpants.
It could be. Could be. You never know. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye, Tim.
Bye.
Is that a power pop reference there with a Teenage Fan Club?
Yeah, Teenage Fan Club, one of my favorite, favorite bands. Still making great albums.
I was just listening to them yesterday. I had my whole big Teenage Fan Club playlist, and I was listening to that.
Dude, they've got another album coming out within days.
They're so
good. Yeah, they're very good. I've been sold and I've forgot what I've been told, and now I need someone.